This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. On the programme this week, new leadership in the Methodist Church and some gentle thoughts with powerful messages. But first, a song of service from the school chamber choir at Lincoln Cathedral.
I will stand upon.
Here I Am, Lord, sung there for us by the School Chamber Choir from Lincoln Cathedral. At the end of this month, the Methodist Church here on the island will officially welcome their new Chair of District, following the retirement last month of Reverend Richard Hall. The new leader of the island's Methodist community will be Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett, and as the surname suggests, Reverend Janet is returning to her Manx roots. I think it's a really exciting appointment, as Reverend Janet brings with her a wealth of experience through various ministries. And this morning we've an opportunity to hear her talk about her life and her faith in a conversation I recorded with her during a visit to see her parents in 2018, where we began at the very beginning.
Well, I was born in the hospital here, went to Onken School, Ballacameen, and from the high school I went to Atlantic College for 2 years, and then I went off to uni and sort of haven't lived back on the island much since I was 16.
Tell me about your faith journey.
Well, I think when I left the Isle of Man, I was sort of searching and growing up and trying to find an adult life and an adult faith. At sixth form college, I didn't do a lot, but at university, I was asking, well, this is the time to make the decision, really. Am I following Christ or not? Being in a scientific degree course, my tutors were telling me I more or less deserved to fail my degree because I still had this strange belief in God. This was back in the 80s, and one of my lecturers was Richard Dawkins.
The Richard Dawkins.
So that was the outlook of the lecturers, and to question that was regarded as quite odd.
What was Richard Dawkins like? What did you make of him?
I think he thinks that we've evolved beyond the need for God, you know, and it's a little bit of thinking we've got beyond needing God, and that comes with a bit of ego, I think. Yeah, so I had to sit down and really contemplate in a way on my own and ask God, you know, was God there or not?
You used a very interesting phrase there, finding an adult faith,
yeah.
Because there's a big difference to your parents would take you to the Methodist Church.
Yes.
So that was part of family life for you, wasn't it, really?
Mm.
But you had to find something for yourself. And what conclusion did you come to?
Well, I think I knew that if I followed Christ, it would have to be 100%, and it would be demanding, and I expected Christ to make a big difference to my life. So I had to make a serious decision. I spent quite a bit of time just sitting in my room and thinking and praying, and one day I really felt that Christ was with me, like a shepherd. You know, I had a really strong sense of God's presence and myself cared for by God. And some people in my journey have sort of questioned that as an experience. But for me, it's something that's just grown and it's strengthened. And I go back to when other things are shaky. Christ is my good shepherd and he carries me through. I think it's a good picture to have of God. When I'm aware of Christ the shepherd, then I know sheep don't always have an easy time and they go astray and they're still looked after. So that's my picture of God.
It's one thing to say, I am making an absolute commitment to God, but it's another thing then to go into ordained ministry. Mm-hmm. So how did things develop then for you?
Well, I did a research degree in agriculture and I was working overseas a lot, but I found that the work I did with people was more fulfilling, I guess, than the scientific work. I'd become a union rep in work and I was dealing with pastoral issues with people. I'd become a local preacher in the Methodist Church and just gradually really finding that God was drawing me towards the pastoral and the people side of things and less to the research.
And how did things develop then?
Well, I had 2 years in Birmingham. I didn't want to take the academic path. I could have been shunted off to do academic theology, but I trained for a year in Handsworth in Birmingham, which was a project to be living in the community and basically learning by reflecting on experience, which was fantastic. So working with Sikh groups and Muslim groups and with a Methodist church in Lascelles, which is one of the more deprived areas, that was fantastic. And that really reinforced my idea that God was calling me to multicultural city centre or inner city sort of ministry. That's what I really felt drawn to then. In college, there was quite a division because the black students were really pushing to get more black theology, more intercultural work into the curriculum. So that was quite confrontational sometimes. But in Lascelles, in the Methodist Church, there was a fantastic working together. The Bangladeshi youth had asked for space and the mosque had said no and the Methodist Church said yes. So there was a youth space for the Muslim young men mostly. They were mixing with Caribbean aunties, the older women. They started cooking for them and it was just lovely to see different ages and different religions getting on really well together. I think the young men would have a lot of respect for the older people of whatever ethnicity, so it made it easier for them to look up to and respect the Caribbean aunties, and they had a great time together.
So from Birmingham, where to next, Janet?
I did 5 years in Leytonstone, East London, and then I did nearly 5 years in Honduras, in Central America, and then I came back to London, to Bermondsey, and I've been there 8 years.
Now, just before we pick up on Bermondsey, Honduras, what were you doing there?
I went as a mission partner with the Methodist Church. I was minister for several churches and in charge of the school on one of the small islands. Became superintendent for a huge circuit of the North Coast and learnt Spanish and preached in Spanish. And
Just stop a minute here. I'm in awe of you. You're just saying this coolly. You're superintendent of how many churches?
There were about seven, but they were really widely spread. This was an external church that had arrived in Honduras, which is mainly Catholic. So it had spread along the coast where the shipping, if you like, was coming in and out with English-speaking people. It was an experience that was pretty demanding, and I learnt really that I had to try and work out what God really wanted me to do. Otherwise, there was a lot of pressure to do certain things and not do other things. And it made me wonder a lot about listening to God more for discernment in ministry, because otherwise you just end up doing what people want you to do and not taking the difficult steps to challenge or be challenging to the congregations.
So back to London, Bermondsey. Tell me about present day life for you, Janet.
Bermondsey Central Methodist Church is a large old Victorian building. It used to have a 2,000-seater central hall that's been pulled down, and we have a hostel now housing 34 people. It was the centre of the South London Mission and has always been there really to be good news in sort of social outreach and to be there for people who don't necessarily go to church, but people who might need all sorts of different help. And back in Victorian times, that was healthcare. It was working to overcome alcohol addictions. It was working a lot with the young people, with education. And we're doing similar work now. A lot of the social support that used to be there 20, 30 years ago with the social services has gone because of austerity. And we're working alongside a lot of people who are struggling in London. Southwark is highly multicultural. The congregation in Bermondsey is 99.9% West African. So many Sierra Leoneans that came during the Civil War, Ghanaians, Nigerians, and then people from all over Africa. It's a place of identity and social interaction for them in a city that can be quite difficult for immigrants. Although it's cosmopolitan, it's not always friendly. And also with changes in the benefit system, so universal credit's been a disaster for us. We see people who are struggling because they are eligible for the benefit, but it's not being paid. And it's been delayed for months, not just 5 or 6 weeks, but in some cases 5 or 6 months to get it sorted. And these may be people who are already vulnerable.
Are you their first port of call when they're struggling?
For some people, yes, because the mission has been there so long that people know it's there, so they will come along. We also get people referred to us, so we're part of a food bank scheme. We have a doctor's surgery lease part of our building, and they refer people to us. The schools know us quite well, the job centre, so the job centre will send people to us as well. But we still feel like we need to do the advocacy because a lot of it's unnecessary, really. That's the sadness of it. And I think Britain has the chance to be generous Britain. We're one of the wealthiest nations in the world, and we've become a bit mean, I think. And that's sad. you know, because I don't think that's where we ought to be.
With all this experience working in multi-faith, multicultural situations, hardly surprising that you have some responsibility for representing Methodist Church at World Council of Churches.
That's been fantastic, and it keeps me learning. And to then be representing the church on a commission for mission and evangelism, it's the commission which organises the World Mission Conferences. And I've been involved in the last 4 years building up to the Tanzanian conference, which was held in March. And that was the biggest World Mission Conference since Edinburgh 1910. That was the first big ecumenical gathering when the missionaries got together in 1910 in Edinburgh. And we were involved in making a very African conference in Tanzania, but with people from all over the world and nearly every denomination under the sun. Delegates were just over 1,000. The staff team was about 100, and there were about 15 of us preparing worship. I was hugely privileged to work with the team planning the spiritual life of the conference, trying to make sure it wasn't just talk, that we worshipped together and that we expected God to speak and transform us during the conference and not just talk about what God might do or what we should do. It was amazing. A lot of people commented that having more time for prayer and worship made a big difference to the conference. It helped the conference be more gracious when there were conflicts between denominations or potential difficulties. I think the grace comes in being able to listen and not be competitive, realizing that the diversity is the richness of God and we all learn from each other. And one of the blessings was, for the first time, we didn't just do ecumenical worship. We allowed particular denominations to lead worship in their own style, to see the richness of the difference in the way we worship. And that was well received. I think the worship kept our mind on the unity of the Holy Spirit. And I'd never worked with such a big team and planned for so long. And it really felt that that had given us more time to listen to where God was moving. And often the worship arrived at a place that we wouldn't have got to had we just put it together in the week or two beforehand. We had an international team of musicians, worship leader from the United Methodist Church, who was fantastic, a visual arts leader from the Philippines, who got the local youth doing amazing, really, really moving drama. If you're talking about conflict in Africa, you can talk about it, but it's distant. And to have the young people showing their feelings, and that was amazing too. I found going around the world, it's great to be able to say, yes, I'm Manx, and say a bit about what that means and be proud of it, but also the different perspective it gives. And I'd like Isle of Man Christians to be proud of their history and heritage and use it for God's glory. You know, we don't have to be like other places, particularly though, to wake up to the environmental catastrophe that's coming if we don't act yesterday, let alone today.
Thank you.
More music there from the Lincoln Minster School Chamber Choir. And before that was a conversation I recorded with Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett during a visit to the island to see her parents in 2018. Reverend Janet's service of welcome as Chair of District, Head of the Methodist Church here on the island, will be on Saturday the 28th of August at 7:30 in Trinity Methodist Church at Rosemount here in Douglas. It's a big church with plenty of room for everyone to come and join in what I am sure will be a very happy and holy start to Reverend Janet's ministry among us. A few months ago, Sheila Sutton joined us on the programme with some thoughts on the importance of being hopeful. She returns today with some more seemingly gentle thoughts with powerful messages.
I'm sure you will all know or have heard of someone who has made bad decisions. I have a family member who made really bad decisions and still, years later, phones me to say that he wished so much that he had done things differently. Living with bad choices is hard for everyone. The freedom that looks so very attractive doesn't feel like freedom after all. She was only about 14 months old and she had spied her escape strategy. Her daddy had put her down and with delight on her face, she made a quick dash for freedom. Then, suddenly she saw him, a big guy wearing a high-vis jacket. She froze. Holding her arms up for daddy to pick her up, she felt brave and safe once more. Sometimes escape doesn't look so attractive. If only we could do just what we wanted. But often, as our little one found, and my relation too, that what we long for isn't often what we thought it would be. While still thinking about our little girl and others who have been helped from the mess of their lives, I remembered a story in the Bible about Jesus and his unpredictable response. One day he was out and about, and the religious rulers of the day threw a woman down in front of him. They'd caught her in the act of adultery, a stoning offence in those days. They waited, trying to trap him, happy to condemn her. Then he turned the tables on them, asking them whether they had ever sinned, done wrong, and if not, he invited them to throw the first stone at her. Slowly, silently, one by one, they walked away, and he helped her up and told her she was safe and forgiven, but to change her lifestyle. Jesus' hands were and are strong. He offers safety, yet freedom to explore, to be. And the offer of those strong arms are always there when we're tired or burnt out. Surprising then that many of us feel that we don't want those strong arms and we don't need those strong arms. The little girl needed her daddy. The woman needed Jesus. Who do you need today? Often one of the first things my husband does in the morning is to check the news online, though that's not always the most uplifting way to start the day, is it? Bad, bad stuff happens. So how do you deal with it? Are you a realist or a dreamer? Does it get you down or can you see a way through it? Sometimes dreams can be escapists, but sometimes they show us how to think outside the box, and we all need that. But be careful who you share your dreams with. Some will step on them, discard them, even deride you for dreaming big. Don't let them. Hang on to your dreams. Those who really love you will encourage you. God wants us to follow our dream and says that when we trust him, we will be strong and do exploits. And there is another quote in the Wise Book which says that we should shine like stars. Dream big. Shine brightly. Now there are positives for you. Have you ever stood silently looking up at the wonder of our magnificent Manx night skies? Sparkling, beautiful, breathtaking, awe-inspiring. It always makes me smile and hopeful. Do you remember the logo used by the Women's World Cup football? It was Dare to Shine. Now there's a challenge. This week, dare to shine, despite the news, despite your surroundings, and counteract some of the bad stuff by shining and brightening up the life of someone you meet today. You won't regret it.
Thank you, Sheila Sutton. And now let's end with a look at the notice board. I'm being a little economical with the things I mention, as some events have been postponed to later dates. But I do think that we can rely upon Bride Methodist Chapel to have their Sunday school anniversary tonight at 6:30, where Kevin Vondi will preach, the guest soloist will be Ari Isinger, and guest organist Reverend David Greenwood. And the Bride anniversary service is at 6:30 this Sunday evening. The weekly Sunday night at the prom concerts continue as usual tonight at 8:00 with a concert by the Summer Singers. That's in the Promenade Church here in Douglas, where admission is free and there'll be refreshments afterwards. Cafe Lingo, the friendly, fun and free way to learn English that normally meets at the prom, is going to be on Zoom only for the whole of August. It's open to absolutely everyone and there's a Zoom link posted on Facebook just before each session on a Saturday morning. To get the link, go to facebook.com and search for Cafe Lingo Isle of Man. But if you have any problems or queries, have a word with Karen on 458 340. 458 340. St Thomas's Church in Finch Road here in Douglas are continuing their series of summer concerts, an hour of popular music every Wednesday evening from 7:45, with refreshments afterwards. This Wednesday, the Londo Male Voice Choir with their new conductor, Jenny Garrett, will entertain, and whilst admission is free, donations would be most welcome. The Thursday night summer concert series in St Catherine's Church in Port Erin continues this week with entertainment from Val Cowley's Concert Party. Admission is free, the starting time is 7:45 and there are refreshments in the hall afterwards. And last but by no means least, the next big event at Abbeylands Chapel is this coming Friday, August the 6th at 8 p.m, where there's an annual concert by the choir Musicale, conducted by John Riley. All are welcome. There'll be refreshments afterwards and a retiring collection for chapel funds. Tickets are not required, just turn up. And that's all that we've time for today. News for the notice board and requests for your favourite hymns to be included in future programmes can all be sent to me via email, judithleigh@manxradio.com, or by post if you prefer. Manx Radio, P.O. Box 1368, Douglas IM 991SW. I'll be back tonight at 9 with Sundown, easy listening music to round off your weekend. But for now, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. The Nation Station, Manx Radio.